Hello and welcome to the Swine Disease Reporting System. This is the report number 78. My name is Guilherme here at SDRS Studio.
Hello, my name is Giovanni Chaves. I'm with the SDRS.
Hello, Daniel Linhares, also with the SDRS team.
And today we'll cover the findings of the month of July of 2024. And today we are pleased to have here a special guest, that Dr. Jiang Qiang Zheng, join the SDRS podcast. Dr. Zheng is currently a professor at Iowa State University and the diagnostic virologist focusing on swine medicine. And Dr. Zheng got his medical degree from the Beijing Medical University and his PhD in molecular virology at the University of Kentucky, Lexington. His research has significantly impacted Iowa, the US, and the global animal health as well. Specifically, he has worked with important emerging swine virus identifications such as PED, Delta coronavirus, Seneca virus, and have worked with zoonotic viruses as well, like influenza, and viruses that have a significant economic impact for the swine industry, for example, PRRS. In today's episode, Dr. Zheng will discuss the PED genotype, information that was added in the SDRS podcast the last month. So welcome back to the SDRS podcast, Dr. JQ.
Thank you, Guilherme. That's a very long introduction for me. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and glad to join the SDRS podcast again.
Welcome, JQ. Our pleasure to have you here. And as you notice, we call Dr. Zheng as JQ because that's his nickname in the swine industry. So welcome to our podcast. And Guilherme, what's the main highlights for the SDRS from the month of July?
Yeah, Giovanni, let's start with the PRRS page as always. And this is the second consecutive month that we have decreased positivity in sow farms and also in the wind to finish submissions. And just to have an idea, the overall percentage of positive emissions is 19% right now for a PRRS virus. But the problem is always in the state level monitoring, right? The overall we are okay, but in the state level, when we look at the historical data for each state, we are having South Dakota, Oklahoma, and also Indiana with percentage of positive emissions above the expected. And of course, we have news as always every month. Right now, we are bringing something new in the SDRS. And right now, we have a new PRRS virus sequence page that we have four new charts for the audience right now. One of them, we're going to have the total number of sequences that were submitted in all the VDLs that we have enrolled in the project. The second chart, we're going to keep track of the new PRRS virus sequence that are identified in the VDLs. And this, we use a cutoff of 95% similarity. So what we do is that we compare this sequence with all the sequences that we have in the SDRS database. And if it has less than 95% of similarity with all the sequence, we consider that as a new sequence for PRRS. And the other two charts that we have, we keep track of the total, the most frequent variant that is detected in terms of lineage and RFLP. And we also have a dynamic table that you can see right now by state, which sequence or which variant of PRRS is most detected, the second most detected, and the third most detected for each of the states that we monitor in the SDRS.
Well, that's a great addition there that it's coming, these new PRRS virus sequence page. So feel free to reach out to the SDRS team if you have doubts on that. Guilherme, what did the advisory group say about the PRRS virus?
Yeah, Devon, let's start with the state level monitoring, right? For the Indiana, for example, that we have increased activity over there, our advisory point out that this must be like some surveillance strategies or some production systems over there that they are testing more in the wind to finish sites for surveillance. And that's why we are having this increased number of positive cases. But on the other hand, for some specific states like Kansas that we detected in the last month an increased activity, according to our advisory group, we are having new and later introductions in the summer, and that's why we are having more positive cases over there. But regarding the sequencing part, our new page, what we identified that the L1C.2 RFLP-124 became the most frequent strain detected in Illinois and in this specific state, and the second most detected in Iowa. And this information, the advisor gives us some insights of what they are seeing in the field regarding this specific strain. And some of them said that comparing with the L1C.5, they see the same clinical signs for some of the advisors. Some of them also define that it's kind of similar, but it's milder compared with the L1C.5. But some specific advisors mentioned that for the sow farms, they had more abortions with this specific strain. And when they looked downstream after they broke with this specific strain, they said that it's pretty similar with that one C.5. So a lot of nursery mortality right after the break.
Giovanni, so those that discrepancy, right? Some reporting higher clinical impact, some more mild, maybe due to things like the herd immunity to that or very similar strains may also be related to similar but not the same virus, right? Based on, this is based on R5 only, and as I understand.
Yeah, I fully agree with that, that those things, as you mentioned, can play a major role that for the PRRS virus and have some implications on the how the clinical appearance occurs. However, the data is showing that the lineage 1C.2 took over as the major one being detected in a full state, that is Illinois, and today is the second most detected in Iowa, that is the large swine producer in the country. So I think that deserves some attention, and we need to pay some attention to that one. What's going on there is not the same as lineage 1C.5 that was the variant one. It's a different one that is started to causing some problems with different clinical signs in the field and deserves some attention there.
And information from the PRRS management workshop last week here in Ames, where some outbreak data was reported. And in general, all of those lineage 1Cs, whether it's 0.1, 0.2, 3, 4, or 5, they tend to have more severe production impact, right?
Correct. Yep. So it's a good thing there to keep an eye, and it's a good thing that we have data to support that evidence now to keep track of that strain. So moving on for the next pathogens, how about enteric coronavirus, Guilherme?
Yeah, for enteric coronavirus, we have really good news that this month, specifically for PED, we have only 4% of positive submissions. This is overall, so counting South Farms, Winter Finish, we just have 4% of positive. And for Delta coronavirus, only 1.5% positive. So really low activity of these two viruses. And the state level monitoring for the first time in the year as well, all the states are doing good. Like they are within the expected for the specific baseline. So really good news for enteric coronaviruses.
Summertime.
And how about Mycoplasma pneumoniae? What's going on there?
Well, for Mycoplasma, we are having an increased activity of this pathogen. We have increased positivity in either South Farm and Winter Market. And when we look to the overall weekly percentage of positive submissions, at the beginning of this month, of July, we have the percentage of positive submissions above the expected compared with our historical baseline for this specific pathogen.
And what the advisory group tells us about that?
Well, yeah, for the advisory, we have two different opinions. One was that these are still animals that remain positive since the breaks in the winter that we got. And then these animals were going downstream. And right now they are testing them and getting positive here in the summer. So that's what's going on for this increased activity. But for some of the advisors as well, they had some problems with Mycoplasma right now in the summer, mainly in the finishing sites. And that's why that could be impacting right now in the July, this percentage of positive submissions above the expected.
So some interesting clinical scenario going on with Mycoplasma. Let's keep an eye on that. And thank you for all of that information of the SDRS, Guilherme. And Dr. JQ, we have PED as one of the pathogens that we monitor in the SDRS. And last month, we brought a chart about the two PED genotypes information there. Can you give us a brief introduction about these two different variants that you have in the United States, and what's the difference between them?
Sure. So let me first give you a brief introduction about the PED. So we know PED was initially identified in England in 1971. The causative agent, the PED virus, was isolated in 1978 in Belgium. From 1970s to early 2000s, epidemic and endemic PDV infections were reported in Europe and some Asian countries. However, the story change event was a PED outbreak in late 2010 in China, caused by a highly virulent PDV strain. 3 years later, in spring 2013, this very similar highly virulent PDV strain emerged in the U.S., and subsequently it spread to other countries. Then in early 2014, a clinically milder strain, we call the US PDV variant, emerged in the US. So if you look at the sequencing comparison between these two in the 2014 that the PD variant strain contains some insertions and deletions in the spike gene compared to the 2013 highly virulent PDV strain. So that's why later on people called this the 2014 variant strain as S-indel. Then the 2013, then the highly virulent, they called a non-S-indel. But the most striking differences are located in the spike gene, especially in the S1 portion. If you compare to these two strains at the full length S gene, they have roughly 96% nucleus identity, but at the S1 portion, only about 93% nucleus identity. I do not want to go to details, but if you compare to the non-S-indel, when highly virulent, this S-indel, less virulent strain, have the three deletion region and one insertion region in the spike gene. Based on those sequences, we were able to develop we call the PDB S gene based differential PCR to distinguish these two viruses.
And JQ, thanks for that. The follow up question is, so taking into consideration the different genotypes we have here in the US, how do a practitioner interpret the genotype, and why would they request, and how do they interpret those findings?
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, the field clinical observations indicate that the S-indel is less virulent compared to non-S-indel. We also did some experimental inoculation studies. We confirmed that the finding in neonatal pigs, example, roughly 5 days old pigs and the 3 weeks old pigs. However, when we did that comparison in 7 or 8 weeks old our pigs, then the virulence differences between S-indel and non-S-indel are not so drastically different, you know. But in the younger pig, yes. And then people just think this S-indel PDV strain could be a good vaccine candidate or used as a feedback materials. So regarding the MLV vaccine development, we initially also tried to use S-indel, but the challenge is that this S-indel isolate did not grow to high height as high as a non-S-indel in cell culture. So that could be one challenge to use this S-indel as a vaccine candidate. But it is a pretty common practice for veterinarians and producers to use this S-indel as feedback materials. So that is a pretty common practice. So that's why people want to know if this is S-indel or not S-indel isolate or strain in their samples. Then they could request this differential PCR. But I like to emphasize a few points regarding this PCR. The first, we always recommend veterinarians to run the PDB screening PCR targeting the conserved region, example, the M gene or nucleic capsid N gene first, before run the S gene-based differential PCR. Because if you directly run the S gene-based PCR, you could possibly get the negative result, then you just mistakenly thought there's no PED there. So that is the first point. I'd like to give you the two examples. The first, in 2018, that's one case. We run the screening PCR first. It's a strong positive, have the CT roughly 15. But when we run the differential S gene-based differential PCR, it was negative for both strains, you know. So that is does not make sense, right? Uh-huh. So we did the whole genome sequencing. We find out that actually there's a 600 nucleotide deletion in that sample of the PDV. So that is the target region by the S gene-based differential PCR primer probe. Since that region was deleted, so that's why it was negative by the S gene-based differential PCR. So the take-home message is that we recommend you to do this screening PCR first. So regarding the screening PCR, we have some options, but nowadays the most commonly used is the PED, Delta and the TGE, the multiplex PCR. $25 can tell you the answer to the three verses. Run that first. If it's positive, then you can further do this antigen-based differential PCR. The second example related to this is, you know, now PED has been in the US for over 10 years. Certainly there have been some evolution. So we noticed that in recent years, that some screening PCR positive samples were negative by those antigen-based differential PCR. Sequencing indicate that there's no large deletion, but there's some point mutations in the primer probe regions. So that's why last year in 2023, a new differential PCR based on antigen had been designed offered at ICVDL. So that have a better performance. But still, I said we recommend you to run screening PCR first. So I just mentioned it several times. So that is the point one. The point two, regarding how to interpret the result, if you run the antigen-based differential PCR, the outcome could be the four different outcomes. First is positive for non-S-indel, negative for S-indel. Second is positive for S-indel, negative for non-S-indel. The third one, positive for both.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one, negative for both, you know. So these are four outcomes, you know. So if you run the screening PCR first, and then you have the high CT values, then if you get the negative for both strain by the differential PCR, it's possible. For example, screening PCR, you have CT 34, 35, 36, pretty, you know, high CT. This antigen-based differential PCR is a little less sensitive. You could just get a negative, it's okay. However, if you get the strong positive by the screening PCR, then negative by the antigen-based differential PCR, that will be a red flag. We need to do some additional investigation. But the third outcome, I said co-infection, positive for both strain. Currently, we can see that is also possible, even in the field. We ever did the sequencing also confirm that. So I just want to mention this four outcomes about this PCR. The third point I'd like to make regarding this PCR, I said this differential PCR itself is good to tell you if it is S-indel or non-S-indel PDV strain in your sample. However, when we try to use this data to estimate the detection frequency of these two strains in the field, that won't be very accurate. So we need to be cautious about this. So let's say if all of those screening PCR positive samples, we run this differential PCR, then the data can accurately tell you the detection frequency of these two strains in the field. But the reality is that people do not always request the differential PCR on those screening positive ones. They only selectively select some cases for their specific purpose. For example, several clients constantly just request this differential PCR after they use this S-indel as a feedback materials on their farm. Then they just submit the samples to verify that the S-indel there. So my take-home message here that I know now SDIS started to incorporate this differential PCR data there, but we just need to be a little cautious if you want to use that data to reflect the detection frequency of these two strains in the field. So that's just a few comments from me, Daniel.
Yeah, so Jackie, if I understand right, for the genotyping, then what we have today is it's either going to be the indel or the prototype. Right, there is some indication that the virus is on the move, it's changing, but at this time, as far as genotyping is concerned, you can either say that sample has either the indel or the prototype or both, but we don't have today anything that goes beyond that or molecular epi investigations like we have for PERS, correct?
I have to add the one more thing, you know, as I mentioned in 2018, we have one case that have a larger deletion in the spike gene, roughly 600 nuclear deletion, then also was present in the US. However, you know, we tested some samples. The Ohio group, you know, tested it. It looked like that large deletion mutant has a very, very low prevalence. Mm-hmm. So we consider currently are still these two major PDB strains circulating in the US, is S-indel and non-S-indel
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Okay.
And Dr. JQ, just to follow up with this question, with what you said about like these samples with large deletions, and also like if you have a low CT value in the sample, and then we cannot identify in the differential PCR if it's indel or non-indel. So we have global PD strains, right? We have PD in multiple countries. And you have worked before with the PERS virus lineage nomenclature, the new one that they just came out on the last year. So for the US, do you think there is any concerns of one of these international strains that can come from other countries and have a new introduction here in the US, or even in the same country, as you mentioned, there's already 10 years of PD, that you're gonna get a new strain, a new PD that is circulating in the field besides the two strains that we have nowadays?
Okay, you know, so far we have been discussing the S-indel and the non-S-indel, these two strains in the US. I have to say that this terminology has mainly been used in the USA, as I mentioned earlier, you know, mm-hmm. highly virulent one identified in the US in 2013. Now it's called the non-S-indel. Mm-hmm. The clinical model one identified in 2014, it was called S-indel. But if you look at it globally, in addition to these two strains, there are also some other PDV strains circulating in other countries. Examples, also classical CV777-like strains. So those are available in the US, in the Europe, and some Asian countries are not present in the US. Okay. If from the global perspective, you talk about PDV classification, genetic classification, they try to use some genogroup, that concept. So based on the S gene, the genogroup 1 and 2 have been proposed for PDV. Then if you further look at that genogroup 1, that's a classical, like I said, CV777, that belongs to genogroup 1. This S-indel, you know, we just described that, then also belong to genogroup 1 based on the S gene sequencing. Regarding the genogroup 2, you know, this the non-S-indel emerged in Europe, in the Asian, and in the US later on, it's spread to Europe and other countries. Those are considered the genogroup 2. If you read the literature, there's a genogroup 2A and 2B. But there were some discrepancies there. When I read the literature in some papers, this one sequencing was classified into 2A. In another paper was classified into 2B. So there's some discrepancies there. We need to be careful when we read the literature. But in most of the literature, generally speaking, the non-S-indel circulating in the US, we consider it a genogroup 2B in most of the publication. You know. So regarding the new things, of course, in the US, there have been some evolution of the PDV, but we haven't really noticed the clinical differences accumulated or caused by those point mutations. Yeah. Worldwide, recently in China, a group reported they called a genogroup 2C. There's some sequence differences. They also did the pig inoculation, demonstrated it's virulent, but we still do not have evidence to indicate that 2C is more virulent than 2A or 2B. So more studies still need to be done at that. So regarding, you also ask about the swine enteric coronaviruses. We know that in addition to PED, there are several other swine enteric coronaviruses, including TGE, Delta coronavirus, SIDS, CV, and also that TGE, PED, recombinant virus. So TGE, we all know that worldwide, the TGE, the current prevalence is very low, you know, so it's almost gone. So that's good news for the swine industry.
Hopefully gone for sure.
Yeah. Regarding the PDCOV, it still have the low prevalence worldwide. Also, we need to be cautious that in addition to infecting pigs, PDCOV can cross species to infect cows, chickens, and also that the report of PDCOV infecting children, you know. So, mm-hmm. So that's some of the zoonotic public health concern there. Regarding another enteric coronavirus called SADS-CoV, do not get confused with the SARS-CoV-2, okay? This is the pig, you know, enteric coronavirus. So far has only been identified in two provinces in China. So I believe that is Guangdong and Fujian. It was first reported in 2017. So far, it has not been identified in other countries. Then one also have the cross species tropism, at least based on the in vitro cell culture infection, it can infect multiple host species of cells. So we also need to be a little cautious about the cross species transmission of SADS-CoV. Regarding the TGE PRCV recombinant, that was identified in several European countries. So basically the backbone is the TGE, but the spike gene has been replaced by PED. So that one, so far we do not have a specific assay to detect it in our lab, but if we run the multiple assay together, we still can tell if there's a recombinant virus there. For example, if you TGE positive, and then when you run this TGE based, the S gene base is negative, then you want to do some follow-up or investigation. But so far, this TGE-PED recombinant virus has only been reported in several European countries, has not been detected in other countries. So overall, in the USA, the concerns of swine enteric coronaviruses are still PED and Delta coronaviruses, at least for now.
Yeah. Oh, JQ, so for all those genotyping discussions, if I understand right, and you said before that they would provide cross-protection against the what we call the prototype. So is that true for the other genotypes circulating too, that they all, if you have a vaccine for one of those more less aggressive ones clinically, you should provide cross-protection or at least expected to do so mm-hmm. against virulent strains?
Yeah. So for the PED, the classical example, CV777 based vaccine was used in China and other Asian countries in 1990s, even the 2000s. But at the 2010, the highly virulent PED outbreak, at that time, people noticed that even those farms that use this classical CV777 based vaccines, that was still outbreak of this genogroup 2, these highly virulent strains. So it looks like there's some limited protection between the classical and this emergent, you know, genogroup 2 strains. Regarding this S-indel and non-S-indel in the US, we have done some work. So we demonstrated that there's a cross protection between these two. Of course, you always have the better protection, you know, of this non-S-indel against non-S-indel, but S-indel does provide the cross protection against non-S-indel strains. But as I mentioned, the one challenge is that we could not propagate this S-indel to high titer. So we did the one vaccination. We vaccinated the 4 pregnant sows with S-indel. Then we challenged the piglet with this non-S-indel. So in that one, since the titer of the virus titer of the S-indel was pretty low, eventually only one sow we detected the shedding of the S-indel after vaccination. Then that liter have the 100% protection, no mortality. But the other 3 liters of the sows, we we did not detect the virus shedding, did not detect or apparent antibody response, then there's a high mortality in those 3 liters. So my point is that, yes, we think that the cross protection, but the point that whether you can efficiently induce immunity with this SNDL. So that is the talk about the isolate. I think in the field, when people practice the feedback, then to look like that's a success. You know, they use SNDL as a feedback materials to induce the herd immunity and then to protect the non-SNDL, then to look like that's a success there.
Yeah, so virus is on the move. Hopefully there's some solutions. Vaccine may be one of them. So maybe time to eliminate that, right, Giovanni, from the country. Why not?
And that's a good question, Daniel. And if you look for the work there on PED, PED is still a very important swine disease in the US. And there is a lot of discussion that starts a couple of years ago and last year that started to gain traction at Lehman Swine Conference. That was a discussion about eliminating PED in swine industry. And that combined that at the ASV was passed a resolution to form a PED task force elimination there to really discuss these and move forward in the veterinary community. And JQ, you are part of that task force. So would you mind us to provide update to where we are at that work being currently being developed there?
Okay. So since the current PEDV detection frequency is low, people think maybe it's a good time to eliminate PEDV. So, you know, the Dr. Hollis, you know, from the Illinois, he's currently the ASV president. In early of the 2024, you know, he proposed to form a ASV PED elimination task force. You know, I'm fortunate to be a member of that task force. So far, we have had two in-person meetings to discuss the different topics and aspects about that. And also in September, there will be a U.S. ship meeting in Minnesota. I believe they will also have some discussion and see the possibility of incorporating this PEDV elimination or as a resolution into the U.S. ship program in the future. So I think there will be more discussion on this topic.
Yep, and just follow up on that. Yes, at the U.S. ship meeting that we have in September in Minnesota, there is a resolution being brought forward for appreciation by the body of delegates about keeping evolving this idea of eliminating PED. So that's going to be a topic that is going to be discussed there in the US ship, and really encourage the producers and vets getting involved on that and get that discussion moving along and vote upon the interest of keeping this evolving or not inside of the US ship.
Oh, that's great. And thanks, Dr. JQ, to be here in the podcast today discussing the PED variants, the global scenario of the entire coronavirus, and also right now the PED task force for elimination of this pathogen. So that's it for today, and see you guys in the next episode.
Bye.
Thank you.